Blog Talk Radio.
In Washington, D.C., it would be helpful if there was a place providing comprehensive array of programs to at-risk children, aiming to holistically meet the needs of these children by providing education, social, recreational, athletic, cultural, summer camp, and outreach programs. Well, there is such a place, and that place is Beacon House, founded by Reverend Donald Robinson. This was a response to an overwhelming need for social service programs in Washington, D.C. Today, we will be discussing Beacon House and other aspects of social justice on a special Sunday night edition of Main Street Universe.
Hello. Hello. Hey.
There he is. And welcome, hello. Reverend Donald Robinson. How are you this evening?
I'm fine, sir. How are you doing?
Doing well, doing well. We're having a little bit of an issue with our mic feature here, technically. Sometimes we have technical glitches here at Main Street Universe, but we're all here now, and welcome to a Sunday night edition of Main Street Universe. very glad you could join us. Reverend Donald Robinson is the founder of Beacon House, as I mentioned, but the mic wasn't on, so no one heard it.
Oh, okay.
It was on for the intro. There's a funny thing where we have two different boards, and I don't want to go into the detail, but blah, blah, blah. Anyhow, Reverend Donald Robinson started Beacon House in 1991, I believe.
That's correct.
And what I'd like to start off very simply, Reverend Don, is your inspiration, what got you going with starting Beacon House.
Well, I worked in the school system in the district. I worked at the receiving home for children, which was a juvenile jail. And then later I became a community youth counselor with the Youth Service Administration and working with kids in these inner cities and didn't see a lot being done to improve their plight. So what I wanted to do was to find a group or start a group to help these children improve and get their life on track. So, and I just decided what I would try to do is to have a program that would help the children to compete academically with children anywhere really in the world. And we're moving in that direction right now. Most of the kids are thinking about finishing high school. We have quite a big number going to college every year. So we're doing a great job of trying to improve them academically, because that's the only way you're going to make it in the world.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I'd like to now, Reverend Don, introduce someone you may know, someone who's also joining us in studio, in person here, and that is, we're in a music studio, and that is Reverend Scott Samuel Michael.
We are outstanding man, outstanding minister.
Hey, how are you? How are you, Don?
I'm fine, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know, it's a long Sunday after worship and crop walk and some other things and meetings and stuff, but, you know, hearing your voice has gotten me energized again. I'm the minister of the Accotink Unitarian Universalist Church, and that is the reason we're having this particular set of programs. We're linking with the Social Justice Council at Accotink Church for the purpose of trying to get the message out more broadly about programs such as the one you started there at Beacon House in Washington, D.C., and we're more than pleased to have a long relationship at Accotink Church with Beacon House. But this is probably about 20-some years we've been involved. We've been involved with Beacon House almost from the start, from what I remember, And the interesting thing is Accotink has a history of sharing the collection plate. We call it the outreach offering. So each month we pick a handful of local, each month we have a different local nonprofit that is a recipient of our offering. And we also try to build relationships with these nonprofits. So yes, they need money, but I think also sometimes it's nice to have that relationship. So maybe we can involve our members of the church in a deeper sense of service and understanding.
They've been deeply involved. We used to have arts and crafts program every Saturday when we first started, and they sent a group one Saturday a month, and they would bring a meal for the kids, and they would bring activities for the kids to participate in this art and craft program. And we had other churches to fill the other three Saturdays. So you all have been very much involved, and we have a summer camp that runs every summer, and we have what we call field day. members of your church come, they bring food, they come and help serve the food and do things that we do at Edgewood Recreation Center on Field Day. They've been doing it for at least 15 years.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, let's back up a little bit. So Beacon House is a nonprofit community-based organization providing tutoring, mentoring, cultural, athletic, recreational, and nutritional programs to at-risk children ages 5 to 18. And these are children who reside in and around the Edgewood Terrace community in Ward 5 of Washington, D.C. And it's great to have you with us, Don, because we know that, you know, there aren't enough organizations like Beacon House doing this kind of work. And, you know, obviously Akatink is not by any means the only church that helps out with Beacon House. So I want to give you a chance to tell the story of Beacon House sort of like from the start and to tell us what excites you about what Beacon House is doing now and for the future, and how might people listening be able to help with what you're doing? So you mentioned that you used to work for the Child Services Agency. Was that the name of it that you worked
it's
for?
It's called Youth Service Administration, District Government, Youth Service
yes.
Administration.
Mm-hmm.
I taught in the district public school system, and I worked at the Receiving Home for Children, which is a juvenile jail run by the district government as well.
Mm-hmm. So you were doing this around in the same neighborhoods, right, that Beacon House is. Is that correct?
Yeah, most of the inner-city communities I had worked in some capacity. And seeing the plight and the conditions of the children, that's what, like you say, that's what made me want to do something like this.
Now, I think you and I both have memories of what Washington was like in 1991. I remember that it being a much more dangerous place back then. It was the height of the crack epidemic. I'd like for you to share some of your recollections of that neighborhood, the Edgewood Terrace neighborhood, 21 years ago when you got started.
Well, it was a typical inner-city community with, you know, all the crime and things that most inner cities have, dilapidated buildings. It's a pretty good-sized place. We're in Edgewood Terrace in northeast Washington, D.C., and I'm quite sure a lot of people listening may know about that. It was such a bad spot that the Wall Street Journal wrote an article about it in about 1995 that referred to Edgewood Terrace as Little Beirut. And
wow.
That gives you some idea of how the conditions of this community that I went into to start this program to try to help to save the children. Catholic University, which is about four blocks away, the administration had them off limits to come into that community. I would believe that it's probably at that time one of the biggest open air drug markets in the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I remember that time, and I remember having friends, you know, from that neighborhood, and actually an old guy I once knew named Earl got shot in the back, not too far from Edgewood Terrace, a friend of mine, and I remember just, you know, all the grief around that episode, and he luckily made it through that alive after a lot of convalescing, but that was a recognized, very difficult place. And as you said, the fact that the administration from Catholic University made it off limits to its students, you know, should tell you a lot. And so tell us about those early days. I understand you sort of began with a vacant apartment, basement apartment somewhere.
Beacon House was my idea, and I was by myself. I took an early out from the district government in 1989, graduated from Howard University Business School in May of 89, and then I had a couple other things to do to become a minister, like chaplaincy program at St. Louis Hospital, and then I had to do an internship at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Rockville, Maryland. And then in 1991 is when I was began to look for a place to put Beacon House. it was, like I say, very run down and everything, and I ran into a friend of mine, and I told him what I was trying to do, and he said, well, there are some guys over there in Edgewood who have some space that they might let you use, because, see, I had no money except what I was getting from my limited retirement and working on the weekends for caterers. So I went over. They told me, yeah, so I started going over every day, doing everything. I started helping children with homework and giving them something to eat. After school, and they really became in the evening because they wanted something to eat. Hunger was a big problem in that community at that time, and I found a little basement apartment that these guys were in. Then I met a lady by the name of Miss Rosaline Nicholson, who was the tenant association president. She let me use another space with a 4-bedroom apartment. But like I say, all of them were not in the greatest condition. And so I moved out on my own, and really that's when we started moving and had a good – and started improving the children with their academics. Basically, they would come in the evening just to get something to eat after school. But when they started doing better in school, they came for both academics and food.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like I say, I had no money. I mean, people need to understand that there were times if I wanted to take the children on a trip, I would go out in the community and ask a couple of them guys who were working there in that community. I said, look, man, I need some cars. I got to take some kids to the Smithsonian. I got to take them here. I got to take them there. Hey, Rev, okay, Rev, they would take me down, and I knew a lady that I could call to let them know, tell the guys to come and pick me up at 14th and Constitution or wherever I was with the children. And it worked out real well. We never had a problem with the young men in that community. Never had a problem with them, and they saw what I was doing, and I was helping their younger brothers, younger sisters, and just reaching out to everybody. And then I didn't put them down either. You know, I tell people, I treated those young men like Jesus treated the tax collector in old Israel. He reached out to them. Try to bring them into him, and you have to establish a relationship, and that's what I did, and everything has worked out real smooth ever since I've been there, and you know,
great. That's some great stories. I actually was teaching in Baltimore City Public Schools, near some neighborhoods, not much unlike Edgewood Terrace. I was in South Baltimore, teaching children from Mount Winans and from Cherry Hill. And was dealing with the same population. And what you say about them being hungry, I remember that being true. I mean, there were a handful of kids whose parents, sadly, were involved a little too much in the drug trade, and sometimes the kids would get overlooked and wouldn't have enough food to eat. We recognized that was one of the reasons, you know, that they had a breakfast and a lunch program at that school, and we actually had a nonprofit come to the school to give them bags of food to take home because we knew that they weren't always eating when they went home. I taught in that school in 92 and 93, so it was right around the same time you were starting Beacon House. I want to know how you said something very interesting, and it's something that some of our listeners may not – have a easy time understanding, but you said that the young men, many of them who were probably involved in some of the shenanigans in that neighborhood, always were respectful and responsive to you.
That's correct. That is correct.
And I just want you to reflect on why that was so. I mean, you're also African American, but you're also a minister. So I just want you to reflect on maybe why you think that they were, you know, respectful and responsive to you.
Well, it basically, I feel it was a way I related to them and to their siblings and things like that. And like I said, I never tried to put them down. I would talk to them a lot, you know, and just to see what was going on in their life, you know, do that kind of thing. And I reached out to them. I didn't put them down. I think that's what it was all about, you know. And I mean, and what I was doing for other people in the community, I think all of that helped. Them to relate to me, you know, and I think a lot of it had to do with the way I grew up too, and how to work with people in situations like they were in, you know, that kind of thing. A lot of people who were out working and everything, when they found out I was going to Edgewood Terrace, they wanted to know, are you crazy? You know, I said, no, you need to find a community of your own to go and try to start a program so we can save the community and the children in it. But it's I treated those young men, with respect. But trying to get them to understand, you know, they need to do other things so they could make it in life. That there was no end. There was no... That kind of thing.
Good. Well, I mean, I think, you know, that was part of my experience, too, living in West Baltimore, teaching in South Baltimore, that even... You know, some of the older teenagers who were kind of involved in, you know, some of the shenanigans of their of the neighborhood, they really would show a concern for the younger ones among them, their brothers and sisters, and we're open to being helped by somebody like yourself coming in and creating this ministry. So I want to ask you a little bit about
one more thing about that. What happened was is that I had. Like I said, worked in these communities for years, and I had worked at Montana Terrace, which is another community like Edgewood Terrace was.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the people who knew me from Montana Terrace, who lived in Montana Terrace, and had moved down into the Edgewood community, see, because like you say, them guys were looking around, wanting to know who is this guy, what does he want, and they would run into people who they would say, "Ain't nobody but Mr. Robinson." You know, he used to work
That's
up
right.
at Montana Terrace. He's all right. Don't worry about him. And that helped me also to get in that community and not have problems as well.
And that brings to something I wanted to comment on. And that was when people talk about a generation or a group of people being, oh, you can't help them. They're hopeless. You know, some people on the outsides. They say these things, and I'm curious about any personal stories of conflict you've run into of that nature. People go, "What are you doing with it? You know, you're going to help. What is that going to do?" That kind of thing. If you could comment on any conflict in that area.
The doubters.
Yeah, I just don't pay any attention to them because people are always talking about it. Get the parent to do this. Get the parent to do this. They don't understand that most of the parents need help themselves. I want to make sure that I'm doing things to help these children to grow and to become useful individuals in life. And we're doing a great job of that. Like I tell people all the time, they want to know, how's Beacon House doing? I say, well, we're doing fine. We touch maybe 200, 300 kids a day. And it's hard for people to believe.
Yeah.
But I say, come at 4 o'clock in the evening. See for yourself. You know what we're actually doing over there, and we've come a long way in helping these kids and the families. And most kids now in Edgewood Terrace are dreaming about at least getting out of high school, and a good majority of them are thinking about going to college and getting employment.
Amazing.
And that you've brought me to one of my next things I wanted to touch upon. Now that it seems you deal with the negativity pretty easily and casually, it seems like. You're just like, I just ignore those folks because you know what's going right, and you know from firsthand experience what's working. I want to ask you about one of the programs that I found interesting, and that's the college tour program that you offer there.
Okay.
Where you go and visit and things like that and expose these kids.
Right. Well, we're connected with College Bound program, which is a city program, and we have about 8 children from Edgewood Terrace and in our program who are part of that program. But Beacon House has its own college tour program. We have a senior group that we work with every day. Not seniors, but high school students, children from grade 8 to 12, and we put on programs for them. And at normally in April or May, we do a college tour of our own. And those kids in College Bound program also do a college tour. But we take kids around to different places, colleges around the country on a tour, so they can have some idea of what college is about and what it will be about, you know. And we do that kind of thing to them all the time. We also we went to New York about 2 or 3 years ago with a group, and we took them to a culinary art school, and they just didn't love that. It's not always getting math and English and all that. A lot of these kids need to understand that there are trades out there and things that they could get involved to that they might want to do and love to do.
That was actually going to be part of my next question, as I was going to say. You show them both sort of traditional academic and non-traditional places of learning as well, and alternative.
That's correct.
So it could be for a skill set, like you just said, culinary, or it could be for something, you know, more traditional academic, as people may think of as the college.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Scott, you had something?
Yeah, and I want to follow that line a little bit. I think, you know, actually there's probably a lot of Unitarian Universalists in the United States that don't realize about this ministry. Our churches tend to be more white and more in the suburbs, more of the educated classes, and a lot of our churches are not in or near areas of the greatest need, like your program there at Beacon House. And so it's interesting that your ministry there evolved out of what's your service at All Souls Church, and that it's it's a powerful testimony to how important it is to have churches that are in places like that, you know, where the need is really great. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about that, because any bright idea only ends up living and having a chance to serve if there's a sound institution that's built up around it. So if you could briefly reflect on how you took a donated basement apartment and turned it into a nonprofit, professional nonprofit with some professional staff, and operating with 6,000 square feet of space to do your ministry. If you could talk a little bit about how you developed the institution over time.
Well, like I say, when I first arrived, well, we started summer camp about the second year I was there, and that was a big part that helped us to develop. We gave kids something to do in the summer. And the summer camp was called Camp Leap, and we named it that because we wanted to do academic programs so that we could take them over the summer so they wouldn't lose everything they had learned, you know, the year before. How we developed that, like I said, I had been a member of All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church for probably, before I started Beacon House, for probably 15 or 20 years. And people need to understand that we had about 15 or 20 Unitarian Universalist churches around the Beltway that have always been connected with Beacon House. They sent tutors. People wrote checks. And All Souls was my physical agent when I started, you know, because and I preached it at Arlington Unitarian Universalist Church about a month after I'd started Beacon House. A member of that church was a big-time lawyer. Monday, he was at Beacon House helping kids with homework. Got the paperwork together that did the 501c3.
Mm.
And then things just started moving. And like I say, all the churches around the Beltway, they would send volunteers to help us with children with their homework in the afternoon. Lloyd Burstyn was a member of Accotink Church, who passed away a couple of years ago. He was a big supporter of Beacon House. And, I mean, he lived at Beacon House almost, you know, helping kids with homework and doing things that he could to help children and the program to prosper and move forward. But without the help of the Unitarian Universalist churches, I don't think Beacon House would be where we are today. I never thought it would be as big as it is. I just thought I'd be able to start a program, help kids with homework, and help them improve academically. But, I mean, we do a lot, and it's only because we get the support from the Unitarian University churches. One of the things that help us to grow as much as we have is an athletic program. We do basketball, baseball, football, and t-ball, all those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And that draws a lot of children and a lot of the family members in, you know, who help to do what they can to help support and do those kind of things.
We'll come back to talk about the program because it's pretty. That's a pretty amazing story in itself,
yeah.
The athletic program. So it sounds to me that you started off with volunteers who were willing to help you.
That's
and
right.
Then people started writing checks, and eventually you ended up being able to foster some fundraising, I'm sure, from a broader array of sources than just from Unitarian Universalist churches. So can you talk a little bit how you find your funding? You know, I know what other kind of resources are you able to get?
Yeah, we got funding from the Unitarian Universalist panel in Boston.
Mm.
The Unitarian Universalists have a program called the Beach Program. They they don't only serve Unitarian Universalist program, but they serve people of other different persuasions. And we got money from them for a few years. And the gentleman who did our 501c3 papers, he began to write proposals and help us. He became
grants
a developer
and proposals
later.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He would write
proposals. If you're listening, Veatch,
and,
V-E-A-T-C-H, is a funding program that is provided because of mineral rights left to our church called Shelter Rock in Long Island. It provides about $20 million of income a year because of some mineral rights found somewhere in Central Europe that was left to that church. And so Reverend Robinson, you know, you said that you were able to get money from Veatch, and that's exactly where that kind of money should be going. That's a great story. Well, I want to give you a chance to brag a little bit about the Beacon House Falcons, especially. I know you have a lot of athletic programs, but they're probably the ones that are most known around the country. So if you could talk a little bit about, you know, the Beacon House Falcons, I'm sure our listeners would love to hear about them.
Well, we like I say, Rodney Cephas, who is the athletic director, does an outstanding job with his program. As a matter of fact, we won a game in Baltimore yesterday, and we'll be in the regional, in the Pop Warner regional finals next Saturday at Eastern High School. And if we win that one, we'll be going back to Florida again.
So it's Pop Warner League. What age group is that?
Well, it's from about 5 to 15.
Mm.
Most of the kids fall in that category. The team, we had 8 football teams this year, and only the 75, the 85, the 90, and the 125 can make it to Florida. You have to be at a certain age and a certain weight. It's a certain weight.
So have they won the championship before?
Oh, we won about 3 national championships in Florida, and
wow.
We won several city championships. You know, you have to win the city championship to get to the Eastern Regional Finals, and then when you get to those, if you win, you go to Florida. And hopefully people are listening and will send us some money right after Thanksgiving, because we have to get money to go to Florida. People need
to
understand that you don't get any most people's foundations don't give money for athletics.
That's right.
So we have to find other ways to get money for football, basketball, baseball. And they need to understand that is so important. You get kids off the street. You get them involved. They begin to think about going to college and getting out of high school and getting into job training programs. Those young people would be on the street if we wasn't doing that. We're not the only group in the city that does that. You have a lot of different programs in the city that's doing a great job at that. But we've been at it for like at least 16, 17 years. And we've done an outstanding job, and that's because of Rodney Cephas and what he's been doing as an athletic director. We have a nice teenage program as well run by Marissa Hargrove.
Mm-hmm.
She's been around about 8 or 9 years at Beacon House. And she does academic, she does sexuality programs and stuff like that to help the kids. And she relates very well with those young people. And all of that's good. And children just love coming to Beacon House.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, we're going to take a little break here, but for our listeners who want to know how they can find out more about Beacon House, go to beaconhousedc.org. That's www.beaconhousedc.org. You can find out more. There's ways there for you to donate and to volunteer. But I think we're going to take a break now.
Yes, we're going to take
We've already gone past,
which is good, and it's amazing how that can happen. We've already been on the air about 40 minutes, which is hard to believe. It seemed to go so quickly. We still have a little time, plenty of time left. And I'd like to, as we go into just a brief song, into a break, it's pretty amazing that a nonprofit group can put together not just a football team so that the kids can play, but a football team that's a championship football team competing with schools and other things in the Pop Warner League. That's a very impressive. And, of course, it's not just all about the sports. We'll talk about that when we come back, Reverend Don.
Okay.
We'll talk about, because some modern words in the world we're talking about now, liberals, might not necessarily see always the value in sports and in competition and all of that. We'll talk about that when we come back. Right now, it's going to be a brief song, another one by Tom Teasley, and this one is called Nights Over Baghdad.
We'll be right back with you, Don.
Thanks.
Teasley song. Welcome back to, for those that aren't aware, that are wandering around the Blog Talk Radio website, this is Main Street Universe, a special Sunday night edition. I'm joined with Reverend Scott Samler Michael, as well as Reverend Donald Robinson. And I am Daniel Michael, the host of the show. And I also host one at Wednesday at 11 a.m. We have a show, Zariana Radio, Thursday at 11 a.m. Walking on the Sidewalk. Now, Fridays in the morning, it'll be like a morning show, like 6 a.m. And Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour, Friday evening at midnight with Jesse Ann Nichols George are the shows on our network. And welcome back, Reverend Donald Robinson.
Thank you.
And before the song, which was a local guy, Tom Teasley, amazing percussionist, we were discussing the value of athletic programs, the value of sports. And I wonder if you can go into that a little bit and why that's important as part of a well-rounded experience in education.
Well, like I say, we run through about, let's say, 250 kids or more a day. If it was not for sports, we would only be involved with maybe 75 or 110 kids a day. So it's so important that we have girls that play basketball, girls that play t-ball, baseball as well. And I'm saying it gets them some activity that they love doing, and it brings them to Beacon House. If they didn't have something to do that they enjoy doing, they wouldn't be involved with us anyway. And a lot of them would probably be elementary and junior high school dropouts. What we do is point them towards the future. And sports are just so important, and it gets them so much involved in what we do. And if you're in the Pop Warner League as well, you have to carry a two-point grade, a C average. And right now I'm trying to get young people to understand that you need to become a geek, which is the smartest person in your class, so that you can get a scholarship. It doesn't always have to be athletic scholarship. It can be, you know, academic scholarship as well. But sports is what draws the children, and not only that, it draws the community. It helps us to establish a better relationship with the community. We have a following of about 250 or more parents and relatives that follow our games and things, you know. So it's just great. Yeah, people need to come by one evening around, like I say, 4:30, and see the kids and see what they're doing. And it's just academics is so important. That's why a lot of high schools and junior high schools have sports, because it keeps the kid involved and it keeps them there and keeps them off the street. And it also helps them to focus on their future as well.
Mm-hmm. And that is one aspect of sports I'd like to focus on, is the idea that it helps you with a couple different things. It can help you with working well with others, accomplishing
mm-hmm.
goals.
Right.
And so outside of how it helps draw interest, I wonder if you can speak to that. What it does for the individual child to be involved in an athletic program.
Well, number one, it teaches discipline. And kids in the inner city need discipline. A lot of them do need discipline. And it helps them to begin to focus on their future. That's one of the things that helps them, is that it helps them to do a lot of that. It just teaches so much. Like I say, discipline is number one. Organization. You have to be really organized, and you have to spend your time properly. During the day, you have to divide it up and make sure you're doing the thing you're supposed to do within a certain time period. And those things, to me, I think are just so important.
Yeah, and I agree. And one aspect that you might agree with, depending on the sport, I think baseball might actually be a good example of this, is the ability to handle failure.
In all of them, even in all sports, sometimes you fail, you don't make it, you don't get there, you know, to the top where you're trying to get, and you have to learn to handle it. We had an example of that Saturday, we were playing a game Saturday, and we fell behind, I think, like 6-0, and one of the kids, he got almost depressed and was really upset because he had been so accustomed to winning And we had to talk to him and get him settled down. But eventually we came back, won the game and everything, and he's doing fine. But you have to be able to deal with adversity. And it teaches you that.
Yes. And you're right. It's in every sport. I think the reason I brought up baseball was that if you fail 7 out of 10 times, you have a .300 batting average. That means you've done well. That's a good batting average.
That's a good batting average. Yeah, yes, it is. Yes, it is. Very much so. And like I say, we do have baseball and softball teams. Girls, basically, we try to get them on the softball program.
Mm-hmm. Of course, football engages a lot of people. You know, you can have a football team, you can have, what, 30 or 40 kids plus all the adults and folks who are coaches and in supervision. So football actually brings in more people in the enterprise overall because it's a larger team.
Yeah, we average about 30 kids on each team. We have we average about 90-some coaches in the Pop Warner League.
Wow.
All the coaches have to be fingerprinted and pass the police exam and all that kind of stuff.
Mm.
We just don't get people walking in off the street. You know,
right.
And they serve as mentors as well as coaches. They spend a lot of time with your children, doing things with them after the football games or whatever game it is, and that's important as well, is building that relationship. With the young person, and if they need help or advice or anything, they'll come and talk to somebody in our program. To see what they can, you know, what kind of help they can get to move forward and do whatever they need to do with their life, and we really reach out to them and their families.
Well, that's good to hear. I know that in church work, you know, we have to check the background of anybody who works with children, and we have the reality at Accotink where we didn't really sort of do that as regularly as we should have until the last year or two. And when we first started it, you know, a couple of people were a little bit resistant. Do we really need to be doing this? But the truth is, everyone, you read the headlines, you know, there are a lot of churches out there that weren't taking good care of children.
Yeah.
And
all staff people at
Beacon
House are fingerprinted.
Background check on the coaches.
The FBI and all those kind of things. So, You can't slip through the crack with us, you know. You can't do that, and it's so important that we get that done. We have volunteers that come from colleges around Howard, Trinity, Catholic U. We pay for them to get fingerprinted. See, because that's so important, and people need to understand that.
Mm.
Yeah, anybody that comes in and wants to work at Beacon House has to be fingerprinted.
I know that you shared about how you fund, you shared about the history, and before I ask you what your hopes for the future are or any new projects, tell the audience about any of the media that you use to let people know about your programs.
Well, I've been on Facebook. And Beacon House, you know, has been, we're on Facebook, and we've used, we've been on Channel 8 several times, and we'll probably be back on air again hopefully in the next week or two, so that we can let people know what we're doing, that we're on, hopefully we'll be on our way to Florida again and that kind of thing. And
We have a newsletter, right?
We had somebody in from the Washington Post not long ago that came in to interview, see what we were doing. They're going to write a story. And we have a community paper there that come about every year and a half or every year, and they write stories about us. So we had one person in 2 weeks ago from the community program that's there. But we're constantly sending out mailings to people around the Beltway, letting them know about our program. We do a paper every year that talks about our program, our accomplishments for that year and everything. It's called a year-end report. We do that, and we send it out so that people can see what our accomplishments are. And like I say, we always want people to come and visit Don't take our word for it. Come and see for yourself. Yeah.
And that reminds me of something that I want to do in the future, Reverend Don, is that in the future, after some time passes from this interview, perhaps Reverend Scott and I visiting you in person, maybe to do an interview, maybe even with some of the kids there or teachers in the program, whatever is good for everybody's schedules, and maybe just do it on location.
Oh yeah, you can do that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we would like.
We've
to
been down to the mayor. We've been before the city council several times, talking about their funding and letting them know what they need to fund and all that kind of stuff. We've been there several times. Not with me. Well, I've been there two or three times, but we also have the children to go and speak, you know, about what, you know, the funding and the things that they're trying to cut, do those kind of, and let them know how important it is, that what we do, and not only us, but other, you know, youth programs in the city as well.
And I would like to get to another. You mentioned cuts. And this is an issue that always irks me, that always gets on my nerves. And it's a little bit away from your charity, but I think it's something you might share equal passion about. Every time they start talking about budget cuts, I've seen it in Maryland, I've seen it in Florida, I've seen it in different places that I've lived. One of the first things they always put on the chopping block is they say, oh, it looks like we're going to have to cut music and art programs from school. It's just one of annoying things that they always do. But they always have money to build the next correctional facility. They never seem
to have
to
understand what they're after. If they, it takes about $40,000 or more a year to incarcerate somebody, and if you're an adult and you send them out state, it takes about $70,000 or $80,000 a year for one person. If they would give me programs like mine $15,000 a year, Mister, we can cut crime. We
Amen.
Can do a lot of things that would help and aid the children that we need, and that's what they need to look at. They're all, like you say, they're always cutting youth programs and things like that, music, even science, you know, those kind of things. We have a science program now on Saturdays that, and we do a lot of good stuff with that. We have a music program on Fridays that helps the children. We're working with that as well, and like I say, it's a constant pull for money and stuff, you know, and sometimes you have to go in your own pocket to help fund some of these things.
Yep. Well, Reverend Don, we got about 5 minutes left, and I really like the sound of some of those, especially that music program, because Dan and I are both musicians. So
yes, we're in a music studio.
We could come down and maybe provide some music and as well as some musical instruction some Friday. But I think what I want to give you a chance to talk about now is, what are your hopes and dreams for Beacon House going forward?
Well. What I would like to do is I wish I had acquaintance like the Godfrey Cambridge up there in New York, who is connected with a lot of millionaires. I would love to be able to talk to people with money so that they could understand how important it would be for us to build community centers for so that children would come after school on the weekends and get away from a life of crime. That's what I hope that one day that I might be able to do. We can save children if we just do the right thing. But we need a place for them to come after school and a place for them to come on the weekends. And you need a lot, instead of building prisons, put that money into community centers for children. And people need to understand that it's just not for the inner city, it's for the suburbs as well.
Right.
Good point.
There are a lot of problems in the suburbs and rural areas of our country. Children need help wherever they are. And it's just not children of color. People need to understand that as well. But one of the things that we've done that's going to be helpful is that we had people from the Unitarian Universalist churches coming in to volunteer. They're working with kids in the inner city. We have the haves and the have-nots. Those kids and the family members and adults know that all white folks ain't bad. Some of them are loving, kind, and they and the people coming in understand now. But all black kids, ain't, these are good kids. All they need is somebody to help them, give them a program or something they can involve themselves in, so they can move forward with their life. And that's what we're doing.
Thank you, Don. I think that's a great dream of trying to replicate your success at Beacon House many times over. But You know, we know from your personal testimony and the story of Beacon House that often it takes the dogged determination of one very persistent individual like yourself. And it's really great to call you a colleague and to know you as a friend. And you will be hearing more from Dan and I. We're going to come down and, like you said, and do some interviews down there. We'll bring some music as well when we come, and we'll arrange that offline. But our time is about through. For our listeners, go to beaconhousedc.org, beaconhousedc.org, and find out more, especially how you can donate. And I think Dan has some closing words for our hour together.
And again, they would be?
Ebony.
Thank you very much for joining us, Reverend Don.
Well, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And I'd like to continue, like we said, continue this relationship and do some other things in the future. And I would like to say something very simple like this, and that is, just as you stated, one of your final things you stated I thought was a very beautiful thing, and that is you can spend $70,000 to incarcerate one of these people or one of the, you know, these your fellow human beings, or you can spend $15,000 a year to put the money to something productive, educational, into something that can actually be helpful.
That's right.
And I definitely think that you also were correct in saying that these things happen in every community. There are some places where it seems more concentrated, but I know a suburban kid locally here who just checked in. He started with a terrible drug habit when he was 12 years old, you know, and he's, you know, comes from, you know, a nice background, as people would say, and had to check back into rehab. So it can happen anywhere. You know, you can't just say, oh, it's just those folks over there. It's not here. So, again, thank you very much for joining us. Thank you for the good work that you're doing.
And thank you for having me.
Sure. And I'd like to have you back on again.
Okay.
The Main Street Universe. And we're going to end with this song here. Everybody, thank you for listening. Thank you for joining us here at Main Street Universe. And we'll end it where we started it, with Tom Teasley. Have a great evening.
Thanks.